These words were given to me by Asteria Geisterblum. She writes from no single place and no single voice. The tale she brought speaks of winter berries, but it measures more than winter. How cold are you, really? By Asteria Geisterblum. Call them winter berries if you like, though they have never had a proper name. Their color sits somewhere between blood and amber, a hue you never quite see in the living month. They only grow once the frost has bitten the last leaves clean off the branches, and they don't like being taken by just anyone. The brambles appear in the hush of the night, just like Marlowe. A lantern casts a tired circle of gold as she walks the narrow path, the cold dragging at her coat, the air sharp enough to bruise her lungs. She walks the same route each year, following the map that the berries make for her. The villagers don't know this, of course. They only know she arrives looking exactly as she did the winter before. Her basket, made from old willow branches warped by years of frost, is lined with lamb's wool so the berries don't bruise. They say her coat is the color of charred pine, though in certain lights it looks more like storm clouds. Snow never seems to cling to it, and her boots barely leave prints. Marlowe does not rush. Winter dislikes haze. She pauses at the edge of the bramble grove, where the thorned arches rise like the ribs of some great creature sleeping beneath the snow. She reaches inside, carefully plucking the berries off their stems. She doesn't worry about the brambles. They never cut her. Instead, they part, thorns tilting away from her skin like gorgeous bows. One by one, she tucks them into the lamb's wool lane, taking only what the town will need. By the time she straightens, the hush of the night is gone, and the first rays of morning light turn the snow to a field of crushed glass. The wind shifts, carrying the walking sounds of the village. Doors unlatching, chimney flues groaning awake, the soft clatter of someone trying not to wake the rest of the house. Little children telling stories. Adults swallowing fears. Marlowe starts her way down the path, her boots kneading the snow like frost kneads windows. Behind her, the bramble groft disappears in shadow, already forgetting it was ever awake. By the time she reaches the first cottages, chimney smoke curls from the rooftops in thin, wavering streams. Lanterns flicker behind frosted panes. And then, someone sees her. The news travels faster than the secrets spilled in the pub last night. Marlowe is here. People gather in the square, not because they want to, but because not going will make you the talk in the pub for years to come. The first approach to Marlowe is Darren, the butcher's boy, though he's hardly a boy now. His hands tremble as he holds them out. Last year, a berry burst in his palm. The stain from the maroon juice is still there, like a burn mark. Two strikes, and you're out. Happened to someone last year. A man, barely done being a boy. Two berries burst, so did his heart the next moment. Darren trembles, his breeze comes shallow. I have done better. Marlowe spares him a glance, but she does not speak. Not to someone who burst a berry. Everyone knows what it means. Kindness refused. He could have, but he chose not to. Not regularly, but often enough. Marlowe studies him, her expression unreadable. She selects a single berry from her basket and places it gently in his hand. For a heartbeat, nothing happens. Then it begins to glow like a coal clinging to its last spark, tattering on the edge of eternal cold. Darren whines, pressing it against his chest, but it glows. The berry hasn't forgiven him, but it has recognized the changes he tried to make. She moves on to the next. A girl considerably younger than Darren, smug grin, holding her palms out with so much demand, their fingers are bending backwards. Marlowe's gaze slides to her, pauses, moves on. No berry. The girl's grin collapses. For a single beat, she looks confused, like perhaps Marlowe simply hadn't seen her hands. Then realization strikes. Her eyes widen, her hands slowly sink to her side, a thought of cold has suddenly doubled in weight. A gasp rippled through the crowd. Someone's mittened hand flies to their mouth, but it's too late. The whole village has seen. No berry. A worse fate than a blackened one, far worse even than a burst one. A blackened berry's bad, a burst one condemns only the one who holds it. No berry condemns everyone tied to her, everyone in her thoughts, in her arms. Her mother, standing 2 paces behind, pales beneath her scarf. Her father steps forward as if to shield her from the stairs, but the crowd shifts away from him before he can take a full step. The space around their family grows like a spreading crack on a frozen lake. Children clutch their parents' coats, peeking out with the same morbid fascination that makes them watch a raging fire devouring a house. Marlow moves to the next villager and thought a girl has become invisible. The girl tries one last desperate gesture, an outstretched palm, a hitching breath, but someone yanks her wrist down sharply. "Don't you dare!" hisses a woman near her, face twisted in disgust. In the coming days, the girl's life will change. Children will walk the long way to school to avoid her street. The baker will stop giving her family the bigger loaf, even if they will offer to pay double. The house will feel colder this winter, no matter how high they stoke the fire. And until the girl learned her lesson, the coming years will not bend easily around her and her family. Marlow continues on, leaving berries in each palm, some blackened, some burst, but most of them glow in a warm crimson hue. "Good year for a few," someone whispers, watching the crowd. "Hope for us all, then," murmurs another. "Because a bright berry casts firelight where the hearth fire can't reach, where winter has taken not only hold, but root. But the relief is fragile. Everyone keeps glancing sideways at the girl with empty hands. Marlow pays it no mind. She continues through the crowd. A berry darkens like wet ink in the palm of a man who lied too often. Another bursts again, the glove of a woman who hardened her heart for convenience, not survival. This is the way you're measured. Not by what you've that others don't. Not but what you can do that others dream of doing, but by the warmth you were able to kindle until winter arrived. Where it all comes back to you. A house with glowing berries in a window will thrive, not in riches, but in peace. In meals that taste better when shared, in quarrels that end with laughter. Gentle decisions bring gentle seasons. Warm hands shape warm days. Out with blackened berries will falter. Quiet resentment stiffen into storms. Old wounds ache louder. Get up once, fall down twice. It will humble you. A house with stained hands or clothed from a burstberry. Well, it will teach you. Pray that it's the first and the last. And a house with no berry. Such a place must tread carefully, for winter is watching. But a village is never just a single house, is it? It is 100 lungs breathing the same cold air. 200 eyes squinting toward the same pale sun. 100 lives warming or chilling one another. Cruelty cools the blood. Selfishness chills the bones. A single snowflake is harmless on its own, but enough of them falling one after the other, it will bury you. And the same is true of unkindness. A shepherd here, a door shut too quickly there, a favor withheld, a hand not offered, and then you're left with winter in your heart. It won't stay there. Frost spreads. Not all at once. More like quietly. The way cold seeps into a house from a crack in the window frame. You don't notice the first shiver, or the second. By the third, you have grown used to it. But your guests will find excuses to not come over. They don't like the cold you have grown used to. If you keep winter in your heart, winter will keep you. Marlowe lowers her lantern as the last few from the crowd head back home. Her eyes already on the road to the next town. But before she turns fully toward the road, she pauses. Her head tilts, her gaze lifts to you, studies you the way she studied all the others. Because you know how these things work now, don't you? If you've spoken gently, then it would have been easier to be sharp. If you have offered warmth without expecting anything in return, your berry will glow. If you have let bitterness take root, if you have chosen the cold out of spite or fear or habit, your berry will turn black. And if you have done that often, it will burst. And if you have turned away from kindness altogether, closed your heart when opening it would have cost you nothing, then may every fire you kindle die choking. May the roads rise against you and the month betray you. May the years strip you bare. Luck first, health second, and love, lost. Motto steps closer, watches your face. Her eyes trace the lines of your expression quietly, precisely, mapping something she'll need later. A name she'll have to remember, a doorway she will one day stand before. Because winter travels farther than you think, and Marlow always walks its roads. And the frost settles on your street when your town wakes one morning to breathe that clouds in the house. And the air grows sharp enough to bruise your lungs. You will meet her on whatever road leads to your door. And she will know your face, where you are warm and where you are cold. She will know the lessons life is trying to teach you, the opportunities it is trying to give you. She'll know when someone bruised you with a winter heart, when life was unfair, when the days demanded too much of you all at once. She'll know all that, but you bury what it does, what it becomes. That part has nothing to do with her. That's on you, decided only by the things you've done, and even more by the things you could have done, but chose not to do.